So my name is Emmanuel Price, as was introduced earlier, and I founded Scape Second Chances Are For Everyone, just out of a need for our community of people who were being incarcerated, whether it was unjustly or that they deserved it. But I created Scape Nonprofit to help folks once they transition post-incarceration. In my experience, there was not a lot of services on the inside that would help people have a successful transition. There are a lot of things that they could have done, they should have done, that they didn't do. So as I've seen a lot of friends and family members get incarcerated and come back out into society with no skills or anything, I felt it was my duty to do something like this. And because of my own experience, I felt what better way to do it than speak from a place of experience and then help people who have been through the same thing as myself. By show of hands or not, how many of us have had a second chance in life to maybe right our wrongs? Or how many of us would love a second chance to right our wrongs? Or maybe somebody, we didn't have our coffee this morning, so we could possibly go back to 7 a.m. and grab that cup of coffee and be a little bit more alert. Like myself, I too was given a second chance. And I'm extremely grateful of where I am today, now, versus where I was. And not to say that I didn't appreciate anything, but going through that period of time in my life from 19 to 24, I'm now 36, it opened my eyes a lot. There was never any type of incarceration in my family. So when I got incarcerated, it was very new for myself, my mother, my father, my friends. Nobody ever expected me to be incarcerated. I didn't even expect me to be incarcerated. But one thing I did own up to my mistake, and I experienced how hard it was to reacclimate yourself into society and for people to take you seriously once you've been released into society. So operate from a place of empathy and accountability, because I feel if I can do it and I'm a young guy, then there are people who are coming out that are a little bit older than me or younger than me. So it's my duty, I feel, for me to help them out. I'm just going to talk a little bit about the Daniel and the Lion's Den, but I won't do too many hallelujahs or amens, so I'll keep that in mind. Daniel, the story of Daniel the Lion's Den comes from the Bible. It was something that I was raised on as well, and I'll give you just a brief story. Daniel was about 80 years old. And he was under the leadership of King Darius, and he led the Persian Empire. Now, Daniel had been routinely praying and worshiping his creator for as long as he could. But when King Darius took leadership and he ruled over everyone, he made a commandment that everybody under the sound of his voice or who knew him would bow down and worship him, and that they would not worship any other gods or any other man, but to worship him for 30 days. And Daniel was like, well, I've been worshiping my creator for 80 plus years, and out of routine and habit, he continued to worship his creator and pray to God, or whomever his God or his creator was. Now, as he continued to do this, you know, some people got wind of what he was doing. They possibly didn't agree with that. So they corralled a few people, and they went to King Darius and said, hey, this guy Daniel is not doing what you asked him to do. We're all bowing and praying and worshiping you, but Daniel, he's over, you know, in a field of lilies, and he's spinning around and worshiping and praying to someone we can't see, that we don't understand, that we don't know. So after weeks and weeks of people complaining about Daniel to King Darius, King Darius felt that he would take matters into his own hands, and he was also corralled by those group of people to say, okay, well, I have to do something. So he threw Daniel into prison, which was also a lion's den. And I think, which is not in the Bible, but I think when Daniel was thrown into prison, he was, you know, he's 80 years old, so he was just like, well, I'm here. I don't know how long I'm here. I don't know what the tomorrow's going to look like. I may even die in here. But once he was in there, everybody was happy. Everybody who reported him and said, he's not doing what you asked him to do, they were happy. So as Daniel was locked in prison, which was also a lion's den, I'm sure he felt he was possibly going to be ripped to pieces. He felt alone. He felt desperate, isolated. Maybe he felt he was wrong. Maybe he thought about, well, if I had a second chance, I possibly would bow to King Darius. Or maybe he said, no, I'm just going to stick to my belief and I'm going to continue to worship my God or his creator. And during that time, it was dark. He was afraid. He was looking around at the lions and they were licking their chops and they were sizing him up. And he was like, hey, I'm 80. I'm not as strong and as young as I used to be. But during that time of his darkness and his isolation, I think that Daniel still had that faith. He still had some hope. I don't know if he knew when he was going to return back to society or that society, whatever that looked like back in those times. But I'm sure he felt that he wanted to see daylight again and that he wanted a chance to right his wrongs or to see his friends and family. So he pondered over ideas and ways to get out and ways to escape. And I think it was possibly dark in there. I mean, I don't think they had any electricity back then, but I'm sure it was dark. So he's sitting there. He's possibly just in a corner. He's hearing the lines to the left and to the right. And he's going through all these negative images in his mind. But even deep down in his spirit, I'm sure he felt like, this is not my end all be all. I don't think I'm going to go out like this. So as he was going through those emotions and feelings, he didn't know if a day had gone by, if 2 days had gone by, if 3 days had gone by. But he also felt that he was going to get out, or he would see that morning or that new day sooner than later. So maybe a few days later, he possibly heard a knock or a nudge on that cave wall, and the stone was removed or rolled away. I'm paraphrasing. I don't know if this exactly happened, but I'm just thinking how I would like to see it happen. And when he felt that light on his wrist or on his back, he felt a little bit of warmth. And one little inkling of light can lighten up a whole dark room. So when he saw that little piece of light, when King Darius had ordered him to be released, I'm sure he rolled over and he looked and stretched and, you know, looked around, possibly dusted himself off and made sure the lions were in their respectable places and not at his heels. And then I think he possibly thought of, am I waking up in heaven? Or is that a light to release me back into society? Like, what is this light? But whatever the light was, he expected it. And it was that new morning where he felt it was a new day. So as he walked out of that cave, he was looking around at people, the same people that had had him thrown in there. And I'm sure he thought, like, how would I reacclimate myself into society? What would people think of me? Will they think I'm a mugger, a robber? Will they respect me? Will they ridicule me because I was thrown in jail? Will they give me a second chance? And then he thought, am I deserving of a second chance? And I think, yeah, he is and was deserving of a second chance. But he didn't know how everybody would welcome him back. And I'm sure he thought, will I work again? Will my family love me? Will I be a second-class citizen? Will I have to continually walk around with an orange jumpsuit or an X on my back so people could identify me, you know? Oh, yeah, that's Daniel over there. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, he was in the lion's den. He got out, but, you know, he's a criminal. Fortunately, he was able to get out and live his life. I'm not exactly sure how that story ended, but I do know that in his time of darkness and such a rough gray area, that he still held on to that faith. And when that next morning or the next four mornings came, when he was able to see that little glimmer of light, he felt like, oh, this is it. I have a second chance. I can live again. There's hope. There's light. And as he probably walked out of that den, he, you know, saw the lions and the friends. And the only thing I think he was focused on was him being a better person and remembering those milestones which got him to where he was at as he was being released into society again. Now, if we could, let's imagine that scenario. Let's imagine all of us going to the zoo with our family and our kids and our children. Something happens at the zoo where the zoo's on lockdown. Maybe they're putting people over here, putting people in the south wing, the west wing, and we're in that lion's den. We've never been in a lion's den. We've been in a zoo. We've been protected, but we've never been in such a position where we were hopeless and helpless and we felt like we were isolated and we just had no hope. And I can say I felt those same emotions and feelings as Daniel did when he was locked up and isolated. I felt I was unworthy, useless. Would I be able to get out and contribute to society? Would my family love me the same as they did before I was incarcerated? Would my friends respect me more or less? Would people take me seriously? Would they look at me and say, oh yeah, you know, he got locked up right out, you know, right before he graduated from college? Would they hold that over my head? Would I continually have to walk around with an orange jumpsuit even though I don't own one? And I understood Daniel's scenario. And my faith and my hope kept me going every day. I knew that I would wake up tomorrow and I would see a new day, a new morning. I know that whatever I did on this Thursday, that Friday would definitely come. It may not be the Friday that I would be released, but I know I could look forward to a new morning. And that's what got me through. How could someone overcome such a tumultuous time? How could someone go through an experience like that and come out and still smile and say, hey, I'm here, I want to help everyone? How did I make it through that? My family, my faith, my will to get out and show everyone, hey, I can do it. I've done it. I'm not like all the other ex-cons or all the other movie stereotypes that we see. And I was there, while I was in there, I was able to talk with other men, grown men, younger men, that some of them didn't have any hope. They didn't have any idea what they were going to do post-incarceration. The skill sets they had were nil, which is why I'm really focused on trying to help change the system. I can't do it by myself, but trying to help change the system. There are a lot of things that go on inside correction facilities that men and women can do. For example, food service or laundry or working in the warehouse. And I feel as they're transitioning out, there should be some type of measure in place to make sure that they can walk into one of those jobs. And I'm just saying, oh yeah, he's out, just give him a job. You know, accountability is everything. Of course they have to earn it, but there should be more focus on the real transition and what that looks like post-incarceration. And as we may not spend $32,000 a year, but it costs $32,000 a year to house one inmate. And out of that $32,000 a year, how much is really being spent on reducing recidivism? And recidivism is relapsing into an old behavior that landed you into incarceration or a negative situation in the first place. How much money are we spending to make sure that we are enhancing the lives of men and women and youth post-incarceration? Out of my experience, I could say none. Luckily, I grew up two-parent home, formal education. So I had some of the tools that a lot of the guys did not have. And because of that, Scotty wants to offer that empty space. So whether it's having a mock interview, whether it's going to the community speaking and bringing more awareness to recidivism, bringing more awareness to reentry, are things that we do to make sure that we can help set up people who are getting out. Because everyone does deserve a second chance. I got a second chance. And I only feel it's right for me to offer and extend that to other people. there's this gentleman that I am working with now. He spent 14 years in incarceration. And he spent it in Oklahoma. He got released from Oklahoma and he flew up to Seattle, was there a couple months, and then decided to come to Portland. Now, during his whole 14 years of incarceration, he started to use his surroundings, which was very ugly, and create something beautiful. He actually created this sculpture. So his whole 14 years of being locked up, he would take soaps and he would break them down and he would turn them into a fine powder. He would take all that pain and aggression and all that hopelessness and helplessness that he felt and that people wrote him off, and he would put that into a sculpture like this. And this is a pretty solid sculpture. It's hollow, it's made of all soaps, but he's had 14 years to create things like this. Now, unfortunately, when he went to Seattle, he came to Portland, and he ended up being locked up for 2 more years. But when he got out, Portland probation contacted me and said, "Hey, I want you to meet this guy. He doesn't know anyone here. He's a great artist." So I'm like, "Okay, yeah, I'll meet him. He's a great artist." And like, he does sculptures. Come to find out, this is what he does. So he's now out. He's in a halfway house. And because I believe in him, I want to help him to continue to create beautiful pieces like this. And as I spoke earlier, I said empowerment, education, and employment. And I want to empower this gentleman to do more things like this, where he can become his own entrepreneur. That way he doesn't have to necessarily rely on the system or jobs that he's underqualified for. I'll put this down, you guys can take a look at it. But Cliff, his name is Cliff, he continues to create those. He continues to check in. And even though he doesn't know anyone in Portland but myself and his probation officer, he really believes in the work that we do. And I feel it's because we have a personal relationship. I'm very personal. I love to sit down and talk to people and kind of dig into their minds and see what their likes and dislikes are. And how can I align my belief with yours to make sure that we have a successful outcome for you, like Cliff? We're able to provide a platform for him to do sculptures and things of that nature. And one thing that he said to me, he said, "Emmanuel," and I was like, "Here we go," because I hear the craziest things from some inmates. But he's like, "Emmanuel, I love you." And I was like, "I love you too." And he was like, "I haven't met anyone in Portland that really took a moment to say, that's a great sculpture, or to really just listen to me and kind of pour into me." And sometimes when I'm speaking to people, I don't try to necessarily pour so much wisdom into them because I learn and I grow every day. But just some of the basic things that we take for granted as far as listening and sitting down and having that eye contact and being able to hold a conversation or just have a cup of coffee with someone, those are some of the basic things that people who are being released want. Some of the things that we take for granted, it may be just flicking on a light switch. They haven't flipped the light switch in 14 years. So something that small is very significant to them. And I'm glad that I was able to be introduced to Cliff, because right now he actually has one of his sculptures up in Pioneer Place somewhere in there. But I'm also helping him have a platform so he can sell his materials. And what he said touched me, and I didn't know where he was going exactly with it, but at the end of his sentence, he just said, "Thank you for believing in me. Thank you for giving me a second chance when everybody wrote me off. But my parole and probation officer said, 'Oh, we'll see you again. You'll be locked again.'" He felt like he still had that faith and that hope. And every night that he was locked up, he used his new morning and his faith. And he's not a spiritual person, but he looked inside and he used that faith and his newness of a new morning to create some things like that. And out of all his darkness, he was able to create something so beautiful. And in my closing, I just want us to be mindful that second chances are for everyone. And that if I had a chance to right my wrongs, absolutely I would. If I had a second chance to give my chance away to someone who was more deserving, I would definitely do that. Because I believe in people. And just like my family and friends believed in me, I have to return that favor to other people. If I didn't, I would be doing myself a disservice. And very appreciative of this time to share this information with you all. And when we go home, let's just not take for granted the things that we have. Thank you.